Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are, the 17th day of October, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go for the pop-out player that makes it ever so easy to listen to The Horn from the website itself. You also go there to get into the chat room. I'm headed there myself. I've been working on a workaround to the workaround. But I'll get there. I was a few minutes late, a few seconds late to air, working on the workaround to the workaround. Okay, you caught me. Guilty. Busted. I was sitting here eating slices of jalapeno cheddar beef stick with slices of Caribbean Red Hot Monterey Jack cheese, and the time got away from me. Okay. It's just okay. But I was working on a workaround to the workaround. In fact, I'm still working on it, as a matter of fact. Just making sure that everything is okay with Skype. I was trying to consolidate, but never mind. Doesn't matter. Hey, it's Friday on the front porch, and I tell you what, next time, I tell you what, next time Carol Baker puts out an offer for the Caribbean Red Hot Monterey Jack and the beef stick and the jam and stuff, y'all take it. Because this is some kind of good. Man, I sliced into that jalapeno cheddar beef stick, a little bit of a slice of the Red Hot Caribbean Red Hot Monterey Jack cheese on it, and just the tiniest little dot of original stadium mustard from Cleveland. Wow. Yummy. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Carol. Good evening, Sparky. Good evening, Texas T. Folks wandering in to the chat room for this Friday on the front porch. Yes, Friday on the front porch. It is the maiden voyage of the Friday on the front porch with the gizmo phone, the gizmo line. So we'll get that going in fairly short order, hour or so, I guess. Give longtime indefatigable veteran Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky a chance to put the bat signal up. Yeah. Just checking our stream. You know, with the workaround, you got to kind of keep an eye on it, make sure everything works. It does. And by the way, I had a nice conversation with John Fox yesterday evening after the program. And we've got a nice little list of worky things to do. And so there will be more modifications made to the website to make it even cooler than it already is. So, you know, that's in the cards. All right, let's also mention the fact that the PayPal connection page is at headonradionetwork.com. And one need not be afraid. The mandatory fields that have to be filled in there are what has to be filled in order for PayPal to function. Okay? It's just a fact. I mean, that's PayPal's policies, not ours. But if you prefer, you can always just go to your own PayPal page, log in, and use bobkincaid@gmail.com as the recipient and put in the amount of money you want to send. Click sending money to family or friends, and it'll waive the fees. That's cool, huh? Yeah. So we're trying to raise $140 this evening, and I got some good news. One, we are $10 into this evening's fundraising, which is cool. Oh, wait, check that. We are not $10 into this evening's fundraising. We are $35 into this evening's fundraising, thanks to Sal. Thank you very kindly, Sal. Much appreciated. So we got $115 to go, but I got a note earlier today from our buddy Tom, otherwise known as Ozone. Was it Ozone, Tom, in your old college dorm? And there's another Ozone challenge on the table this evening. Tom is willing to put forward $100 for if people will match that. I will apply Sal's recent contribution that came into it. So $75 to go. The goal being not only to meet this evening's fundraising goal, but to get out front on this coming Moran Monday, which would be really, really nice if we can pull that off. Sal's 25 just got doubled to 50, and in whatever combination you send it in your 75 becomes 150. So we can actually finish fundraising for tonight and get a start on Monday. And it was kind of nice having a couple of days of being out front. I mean, there's sort of this joyous little celebration of bill paying that went on. Yeah. So shall we give that a go? Carol pointing out this being front porch for Friday on the front porch. Drinks on the Virganda for everyone. Don't know how it's going to balance. You know, we spend a lot of time with a lot of fairly serious subjects around here. Sometimes a giggle is good. And before we jump into the swamp, I thought a giggle might be appropriate this evening. John Fox shared something with me last night during the course of our conversation. There is a comedy institution in Australia by the name of Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E, and Daw, D-A-W-E, Clark and Daw. Now, think of it as maybe sort of an updated modern version of Bob and Ray from the great old days of Bob and Ray's comedy radio. These guys are geniuses. They work in video. This particular piece is called International Diplomacy, A User's Guide. Their shtick is to work as, you know, it's an interview shtick. But I'm not going to kill the fun by, no, just, there's not a lot visual about this. The audio really works as humor. And God, I laughed. I couldn't stop laughing. Then I went off on a spree of just watching Clark and Daw clip after Clark and Daw clip. You'll understand why I found this so funny, because actually the topic that is inside this clip we dealt with at the beginning of the week on Moran Monday, so it puts a nice little bookend on the week as well. Did I say hi, I'm Bob Kincaid? Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Anyway, have a giggle.
Now, your name is Rowan. Rowan is my name. Yes, Brian, good evening.
And you're Scottish, Rowan.
Scottish? No, Brian, I'm not Scottish. I'm from Albury.
Yeah, McKind, though. Your surname, that's Scottish, isn't it?
No, that's not my surname, Brian.
I'm sorry, that's what it says here, Rowan.
Well, you must be mispronouncing it, Brian. It's not McKind.
Well, what's your surname?
Machine.
Oh, Rowan Machine.
That's right, Brian.
My apologies
that's
there,
right,
Rowan.
That's all right, Brian. No, I get a bit of that.
Okay, Rowan, your special subject tonight is international diplomacy.
Yes, indeed it is.
Very much in the news at the moment.
It is, yes, we could do with some.
And here we go, Rowan. First question, who said diplomacy is the art of telling someone to go to hell in such a way they asked for directions?
Winston Churchill, Brian.
Correct. And who was it that said force is all conquering, but its victories are short-lived?
Daniel Day Lewis.
No, no, you're close,
though. I'm pretty sure he did. He was standing
very
near
close.
A window, and then he turned around. Oh, I know. It'll be Abraham Lincoln.
Correct.
Yep.
Who said he was going to shirt front climate change?
I've got no idea, Brian.
Correct. Who described war as God's way of teaching Americans geography?
Ambrose Bierce.
You are going so well,
oh,
Ron.
Good.
What was the Congress of Vienna?
The Congress of Vienna?
Yep.
Was it something to do with Freud's parents?
I think you're guessing there.
Well, we're
Rowan.
All guessing.
No, it was where the map of Europe was redrawn after the Napoleonic Wars.
Oh, yes, Talleyrand.
Next question, what was the result of World War I?
World War II.
Correct. What was the Marshall Plan?
Oh, billions of dollars of American money was pumped into Europe, Brian, to rebuild it as a bulwark against communism after the Second World War.
Correct. What was the Munro Doctrine?
Oh, was that when she sang Happy Birthday to President Kennedy? She did it very slowly and quite soft-like,
correct,
Brian.
Rowan.
Yeah,
you...
It worked really well.
This is great, Rowan. I mean, you've smashed it out of the park here.
Oh, good, good.
I mean, you have won the world rights to the statement, coal is good for humanity.
Yeah, sorry, what was the statement again, Brian?
You've won the world rights to the statement, coal is good for humanity.
Coal is good for humanity?
Yeah.
But it's not, Brian. I mean, if you burn coal, you're actually poisoning the atmosphere of the earth.
Rowan, that's actually not the issue here.
Well, what do you think the issue might be, Brian?
Well, you can make some money here. You own the world rights to the statement.
Well, can I own the world rights to something sensible, do you think?
Take it or leave it, I'm afraid, Rowan.
No, I don't want it, Brian. If you think it's so good, perhaps you should have it.
Well, I don't want it.
Does anyone want it? Anybody want a statement? A stupid statement?
So many other, I mean, yeah, they touch on Australian politics, but there's also a decided environmental bent to what they do, and I haven't I haven't heard funny and fun. It's a stupid statement. Way back, and I remember playing this on the air because John Fox brought it to my attention then, too. You'll see what I mean by they're decidedly environmentally funny. There was a little problem. With an oil tanker. Some of you may recall this. This is worth going back for, though. I mean, you know, we're kind of lighthearted on Friday, right? We have a giggle or two. Yeah. By the way, all this stuff can be found at MrJohnClarke.com. Oh, these guys are a scream.
Great pleasure, thank you.
This ship that was involved in the incident off Western Australia this week...
Yeah, the one the front fell off?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not very typical, I'd like to make that point.
Well, how is it untypical?
Well, there are a lot of these ships going around the world all the time, and very seldom does anything like this happen. I just don't want people thinking that tankers aren't safe.
Was this tanker safe?
Well, I was thinking more about the other ones.
The ones that are safe?
Yeah, the ones the front doesn't fall off.
Well, if this wasn't safe, why did it have 80,000 tonnes of oil on it?
Well, I'm not saying it wasn't safe, it's just perhaps not quite as safe as some of the other ones.
Why?
Well, some of them are built so the front doesn't fall off at all.
Well, wasn't this built so the front wouldn't fall off?
Well, obviously not.
How do you know?
Well, because the front fell off and 20,000 tonnes of crude oil spilled into the sea caught fire. It's a bit of a giveaway. I just like to make the point that that is not normal.
Well, what sort of standards are these oil tankers built to?
Oh, very rigorous maritime engineering standards.
What sort of thing?
Well, the front's not supposed to fall off for a start.
And what other things?
Well, there are regulations governing the materials that they can be made of.
What materials?
Well, cardboard's out.
And?
No cardboard derivatives.
Like paper?
No paper. No string, no sellotape.
Rubber?
No, rubber's out. They've got to have a steering wheel. There's a minimum crew requirement.
What's the minimum crew?
One, I suppose.
So the allegations that they're just designed to carry as much oil as possible, and all the consequences, I mean, that's ludicrous.
Absolutely ludicrous. These are very, very strong vessels.
So what happened in this case?
Well, the front fell off in this case, by all means, but it's very unusual.
But Senator Collins, why did the front book fall off?
Well, a wave hit it.
A wave hit it?
A wave hit the ship.
Is that unusual?
Oh, yeah. At sea, chance in a million.
So what do you do to protect the environment in cases like this?
The ship was towed outside the environment.
Into another environment?
No. It's been towed beyond the environment. It's not in the environment.
No, but from one environment to another environment.
No, it's beyond the environment. It's not in an environment. It has been towed beyond the environment.
Well, what's out there?
Nothing's out there.
Well, there must be something
out there. There is nothing out there. All there is sea and birds and fish.
And?
And 20,000 tonnes of crude oil.
And what else?
And a fire.
And anything else?
And the part of the ship that the front fell off. But there's nothing else out there.
Senator Collins, thanks for joining us.
A complete void.
Yeah, we're out of time.
The environment's perfectly safe. We're out of time?
Yeah.
Can you book me a cab?
But didn't you come in a Commonwealth car?
Yes, I did.
What happened?
Well, the front fell off.
Oh, God, those guys are good. Oh. Ah, the front fell off. The top fell off the mountain. MrJohnClark.com. And not right now. No. Later. And wander on by the chat room if you want. Folks will be, the crowd will, I suspect, be growing as the evening progresses. But that was, that just did my heart good. Coal is good for humanity. It's nice to see the Australians hear their Prime Minister say that and realize that he is a complete jackass. Because many of us in the rest of the world recognize it too, and we're hoping Australians will take things in hand and, well, de-jackass themselves sometime fairly soon. I'm proud to say the front has not fallen off the front porch here at the mansion. Oh, no. No. And like I said, we'll be firing that up in about 40 minutes or so. So let's have a look around. You know, we've got probably catch up with some stuff that we didn't quite get, didn't touch on earlier. I don't know. Is it still EGADS, E-Bowler? EGADS, E-Bowler. I mean, is this a carryover? It kind of appears to be. Because we got this. Out there in Fundyland, there's something that people with the mental abilities of sphagnum peat moss tune into. Called the Hagee Hotline, and yes, it's that Hagee. Starve! I ain't starving, John. I got me some spicy jalapeno beef stick and some Caribbean Red Hot Monterey Jack and some stadium mustard! And I'm sitting right here, as you like to say, on my blessed assurance. This goes back to Tuesday, I believe. John Hagee, of course, is a hustling televangelist. He's also the head of and founder of Christians United for Israel at Queefy. And being as he is a minister, he feels fully qualified to opine about Ebola. Let's check in with the Hagee Hotline.
I want every American to hear this very clearly. The prophet Joel says in the third chapter, I, God, will bring all nations, and hear that phrase, all nations includes America, into judgment. For they have divided up my land, the land of Israel.
Howdy do. How about that? There was the prophet Joel, who didn't understand why it rained and probably stood in slack-jawed amazement at the sight of a wheelbarrow. And he's translating for God, who's gonna go to work on all nations, and that means America. Even though, assuming if Joel was real, which he very likely wasn't, he would have been babbling along, oh, when? 700 BCE? When the only people who knew about this part of the world were the people who were already living here and building magnificent, profound societies. Do you realize what a Mayan culture could have done to the... Oh, my God. But they didn't, because they never met. But anyway, all Americans need to hear this. Well, pardon me, I'll swallow in a moment. Another chicken leg.
God says when any nation divides up the land of Israel, they are subject to judgment. And
Okay. We kind of haven't. The United States has sat idly by while Israel has divided up the land of the Palestinians. You know, settlements and stuff. And Operation the Edge of Our Boot Heel or whatever it was. Not a lot of dividing going on. So I think we're in the clear with old Joel. But no, no, no. This isn't really about that. I mean, except sort of tangentially.
Dividing Jerusalem is dividing the land. Our president is dead set on dividing Jerusalem. God is watching, and he will bring America into judgment. There are grounds to say judgment has already begun, because...
Oh, no. Really? Is that where we're going, John? Nice little note coming in from Brother Steve in New York. Has anyone proposed a Jonathan Swift-type essay that we should cook Pastor Hagee to feed the hungry? On the other hand, I think that if I had the choice of starving or consuming Hagee's, I see what you did there. I'd starve! Wouldn't blame you, Steve. Wouldn't blame you. Hey, thanks to Carol for jumping in this evening on top of the lovely snack that I've been enjoying. We are now down to $110 to go in fundraising. Carol just turned 5 into 10. You know, 5 will get you 10, 10 will get you 20. Pick a river of beer flowing over your mother's paisley shawl. Yes. So thank you, Carol and Sal, for responding to Tom's ozone challenge for the 17th of October. Oh, dear God, let's go back to John Hagee. There can't be that much more of this. Oh, there's more than you want.
Has already begun. Because he, the president, has been fighting to divide Jerusalem for years now. We are now experiencing the crisis of Ebola.
Damn. You just knew, didn't you? Of course we knew. I just noticed something. John Hagee looks like a much more sinister version of Charles Durning. I like Charles Durning a lot better. Yep, yep, we're getting some Ebola because there are still a few Arabic people or maybe some Muslims in Jerusalem who haven't yet been murdered or rubbed out or eliminated or solved or whatever it is Israel says they're doing it right. Huh. I'll be darned. You know, if I was Pastor Hagee and I was going to point towards something that God was doing to America to punish us for dividing Jerusalem, I think I'd talk about guns. Because something like 88 people a day in this country or week or something die from handgun violence. And every time a bullet strikes a human being, it's some form of violence, okay? Can we just take that as read? Or then, you know, how about the flu? Plain old, common, boring, garden variety influenza. How about the flu? Because, see, if you're looking for something where God's striking down people... Well, the Almighty strikes down about 22,000 Americans per year with the flu. Yeah. Now, divide that by 365, and you get a per-day average that's, what, 70? 70 people a day? No, what am I thinking? Yeah, 22 divided by 3. Yeah, about 700 people a day. Now, that sounds like some divine retribution. But that's too boring. It doesn't feel all plaguey and stuff. See how plaguey rhymes with hagey? Oh, the time that gets spent on this. That's not plaguey enough. No, you need something scary and African and exotic and right. Never mind the fact that so far God has only managed to whack one individual who was Liberian and wasn't American. And didn't have a damn thing to do with Israel. I think we have an equation coming in from Steve. Subject line: partitioning is Jerusalem. Partitioning Israel equals Ebola equals the gay agenda equals Benghazi equals IRS gate equals abortion equals taking God out of the skews equals Obama. You forgot golf and tan suit and Carol and I were working on this earlier today on her Facebook page. But Steve says, yeah, they're all interchangeable. No, they lead one to the other. It's one plague after another. I wonder if anybody's bothered to tell John Hagee that his God's not very convincing here.
We are now experiencing the crisis of Ebola. We have a crisis in our economy. We are...
Wait. We have a crisis in our economy? Did anybody tell this dude that the deficit is at a... No, really, count it. 40-year low? Let's see. Let me do my gazintas and my cipher. And this is 2014, so that's 2000. So that's 36. So that's 1974. Gosh, that's before St. Ronnie of Raygun. Whoa. That's some economic crisis. Either Joel was off his kibble that day or John Hagee's off his rocker. You pick.
Worried on every hand that we're going to be attacked by radical Islam. And there are some very rational voices saying we are their next target. We are a nation that has a crisis of leadership. We are in chaos and crisis. Anarchy is running our nation in Ferguson, Missouri.
Huh? What, Edith, huh? How did we get from Ebola to Ferguson? Does old John Hagee just take a bath in liquid acid and start talking to the snakes that are growing out of the clear blue sky in front of his face? Oh, what? I gotta get that again.
By radical Islam. And there are some very rational voices saying we are their next target. We are a nation that has a crisis of leadership. We are in chaos and crisis. Anarchy is running our nation in Ferguson, Missouri.
Anarchy? Anarchy? The whole governmental structure is just packed up and gone. Anarchos means to be without a governing body. Because I'm thinking that wasn't anarchy when the cop pulled the gun and blew away Michael Brown. I mean, he was kind of acting on behalf of the government, wasn't he? The local city government, Ferguson, right? Yeah. So, I want to try to get this straight. John Hagee says that God has killed, his God has killed one Liberian and made a couple of nurses sick as punishment for the United States dividing Jerusalem, which we didn't do, and that that punishment includes anarchy in Ferguson and the deficit being lowered to 40-year lows. Carol answering the question, how did we get from Ebola to Ferguson? Because Pastor Hagee just doesn't quite feel comfortable saying the N-word during a sermon. Yeah. But no, really, it is still E-Gad's Ebola. Like I said, it's here. You know, Jesus, I hate this term. The right wing threw a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy hollering for an Ebola czar. So, Ebola czar, what was it? Didn't he come after Nebuchadnezzar? And then did Ebola czar descend from the temple and declare happiness in the land, and the river flowed with milk and honey. What? I don't know. And said, let these people go. What? Ebola czar. So we got an Ebola czar. Shh. Just want to point something out. If we had a surgeon general, he'd be the Ebola czar. But we don't have a surgeon general. Because the Republicans who run the Senate said we can't have, you know, with some Democratic collaboration, you know, folks like my senator, Joe Manchin, they said we can't have a Surgeon General because that one in their White House with the deep-seated hatred of white people, the Kenyan Muslim, well, he wanted a Surgeon General, and if he wants a Surgeon General, we, by God, can't have a Surgeon General because that must be socialism. Right? But really, the Surgeon General would be the Ebola czar. I think his first name is Eleazar. Eleazar Ebola czar. We have one. But see, the guy that the Kenyan Muslim that lives in our White House nominated to be the Surgeon General had the unmitigated, sickening, anti-American, unpatriotic, anti-constitutional notion of pointing out that we have a lot more people dying from gunfire injuries and gunfire incidents in this country than we probably ought to. And that was un-American. And so we can't have a Surgeon General. So there's nobody being Surgeon General out there trying to talk common sense to the American people about Ebola. So this morning, you know, I told you, I got something screwed up in my neck, and, you know, because I'm a hillbilly, remember when Flush Flimball checked into the Happy Hotel in Arizona where he talked to horses for 6 weeks because he announced to his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking listeners that he had become addicted to pain medicine? My friends, I am a junkie. No, he never said that. Well, he claimed that he had first become addicted to pain medication because his doctor gave him some because he had a hurt neck. I, too, have a hurt neck. But being a hillbilly, I cannot have pain medications because we hillbillies are prone to abusing it. Mm-hmm. Nobody else abuses pain medication but hillbillies. So you walk into a doctor's office, and there's almost every doctor's office in the area, there's a sign that says, we ain't going to give you no pain medicine. Suffer, you damn hillbilly. If aspirin or ibuprofen or some of that napra whatever don't fix it, suck it up. You was born to suffer anyhow. So I'm going to physical therapy. And I think I'm at that part of physical therapy where it just really hurts all the time. And so I walk in for my physical therapy appointment today, and here's this same clown that's in there. I don't know why, but he's there. I think he's just put there to torment me, which is a lot more effective than killing a Liberian as far as punishing me is concerned. And once again, they've got the TV tuned over to Fox. And he's sitting there trotting away on the treadmill. And, you know, he's very impressed with his own perspicacity. Although, I don't think he probably knows the word. Now, why in the world? He says. And again, this is that right-wing privilege that's out there. They just go babbling their stupidity out into the air and expect everybody to go, yeah, uh-huh, you are smart. No, Arlie says, now why in the world would you appoint a lawyer to be the Ebola czar? Note coming in from Michael in Sebastopol. Ebola czar was the beloved liberator of a large swath of South America from the Spanish Empire. Yes, Simone Ebola czar, wasn't it? Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Why is God so obsessed with a thin strip of beachfront property, considered the size and scope of the known universe? P.S. I'd love for God to get rid of Tony Abbott, but we don't vote for prime minister. The holder of the office is the leader of the political party that won the election, which is why we had Kevin Rudd, followed by Julia Gillard, followed by Kevin Rudd again. The party decided to change leadership, so we got a new prime minister each time they did. Ah, you might be fact. I'm sorry. I love the way that word is pronounced in Australia. F-E-C-K-E-D. Fact. You might be fact. So what you're telling me, Robert, is you may very well be stuck with. Okay, so can you get rid of the Liberal Party then for a while? Pretty please? It's just getting more and more confusing for Steve in New York. Bob, help me out. We had surpluses during our first iteration of Satan Bill Clinton. I'm not sure what that statistic regarding the lowest deficit in 40 years means. I think it means, if I read it correctly, it has diminished at a faster rate than it has in 40 years. It's gone down faster or something like that. I read it. Irish Dave pointing out, you, as a rule, according to Agenda 21, must be this fat to ride the crazy train. So, anyway, there I am, minding my own business. When this guy said, why in the world would you appoint a lawyer? As the Ebolers are. And see, he's real smart-like and everything. And he's posturing and he's kind of preening and strutting around like a great big giant gross Mick Jagger. And he doesn't expect anybody to answer. And I said, well, I'll tell you, buddy. You appoint a lawyer to be Ebola czar because the response to Ebola has a medical aspect to it. But the fact of the matter is telling people where they can go, when they can go, who has to be quarantined, who has to be deprived of their freedom, those, buddy, are legal issues. But I wouldn't expect you to know that. Those things involve something called the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which you're not supposed to just be able to trample on because some idiot on Fox News said, Ebola!
Oh, and he turned. I don't think so. That's just more of that political stuff from that Obama. I said, of course it's political. It's a political office. What did you want it to be, ballet? I wasn't yelling, but I said, because I'm pretty sure, I'm looking at you, and I'm pretty sure you don't think much of science because you deny global warming, you deny climate change, you deny the age of the Earth, you deny evolution, but suddenly you want a doctor as Ebola czar? And I just looked at him and said, right-wing assholes, and went off to get my physical therapy. I'm tired of it. I really am. My frustration level is through the damn roof. I'm sick of their privilege. I'm sick of their idiocy, and I'm sick of people who pretend that it's okay for them to just spout the stupid, and we all have to take it. It is, in a word, unacceptable. But this kind of dovetails into something that I would like to discuss with the Friday on the Front Porch gang. Maybe it's not particularly if you're not in a so-called battleground state or somewhere that there's a hot election going on, you know, maybe you live in the first congressional district of Texas and it's just going to be Louis Gohmert and you're stuck with it. Or maybe you live in a sane state where you're going to happily... But anyway, I don't. I live in a state that is being absolutely flooded with Koch brothers' money. And so beginning about mid-September, there started to be a trickle of mailing. Maybe once every couple of days, 3 days, 4 days. Now they're coming in every damn day, these flyers, these political flyers. And you know what? I want to make sure that I'm absolutely bipartisan about this. I really do. I say a pox on both their houses. Because, you know, the third parties can't afford mailings. Every day I go to my mailbox, which is... I might note, my mailbox. And, for instance, if I have electrical service, that means that I have consented to have an electric bill sent to that mailbox. If I have phone or internet, I've consented for the phone company to send me a bill. And on like that. I generally consent for people to send me things, communications that, but I'm going to see if we can work through this. Oh, Devin asking, who's the batshit czar? That's Bill O'Reilly, Devin. Yeah, see, I'm not so sure. John pointing out, I thought U.S. mailboxes were federal property. I always heard that. But the federal government didn't pay for it. I think I have some sort of an ownership interest in it. And now it is every damn day. There's another one of these godforsaken flyers from some miserable, shit-eating candidate. That the truest statement on which is probably the permit number for the mailing. And I'm including the Democrats and the Republicans in this. See, that's what Devin's saying. Your mailbox is the property of the U.S. Postal Service.
but the U.S. Postal Service is barely even an arm of the federal government anymore. When some bunch of drunked up young hillbilly hooligans came through and knocked everybody's mailboxes off of their posts a little while back, I didn't see the U.S. attorney coming by to take a hand in matters. In fact, it kind of took a little bit of pressure to even get the county deputy to come out and take a report. But, and this all sort of made sense swirling around in the stream of consciousness of my mind earlier this morning after I took the mail out of the box and found out there was a package waiting for me down to the post office. But these sleazy flyers, land in your mailbox because they are deemed to be political speech. Just like being a corporation is deemed to be political speech. And it's like robocalls. That is deemed to be political speech. But you know what? It took some fraction of my finite existence to reach into the mailbox, look at that filthy piece of printed swill, waste a couple of brain cells hating it, and then move on. I resent that. I resent the theft of my life. However minuscule it may be, that is represented by that political trash, swill, I said, garbage, vomit. Because that's all it is. It has no... And this is an interesting standard that was elucidated in cases revolving around the definition, and Potter Stewart said, I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it, what obscenity is. But in pornography trials, the standard was whether something has redeeming social, political, or artistic value. I submit to you that the millions upon millions upon millions of dollars that is spent printing up these vile broadsheets, no matter whose they are, is in fact an obscenity. It is an insult. It is an insult to people who hold the franchise. Any human being who is going to make a decision about whom to vote for in an election based on any of this garbage that lands in our mailboxes is probably too stupid to find the polling place in the first place. And I have said it before, and I'm going to stand by what I have said. We need a 21st century interpretation of the First Amendment. Irish Dave pointing out, if those flyers that don't have postage on them, stamp, bulk permit, and such as that, and they're in your official mail receptacle, a federal crime has been committed. Well, they do. I mean, they've got a, there's no stamp. There's no postmark. There's a mailing permit box in the corner that was printed at the print shop. You know that old saying, your rights end where my nose begins? Well, these goddamn flyers are way past my nose. They land in my house. I have to put them in the trash because I can't burn them because that's illegal. So I have to put them in the trash. I'm damn sure, you know, because I'm damn sure not going to take them to the polling place. You know what? Pick a flyer, any flyer, and go, no. So I have to put them in the trash. The trash goes to the garbage. The garbage goes to the landfill. And by some tiny fraction, that landfill is further exhausted by the presence of, oh, my God, how many of these things have there been? I submit that no politician has a right to invade my home. And that is what they are doing with these mailings and these robocalls. They are invading my home. I have an absolute right to pick out whom I will vote for without any influence peddling whatsoever through my mailbox or my telephone. I'd like to say through the television and the radio, too, but I think that horse is too far gone out of the barn. You know, we've talked about cleaning up the elections process. And we've talked about the money in politics and getting the money out of politics. And one of the problems with that is that you're going to have a hard time getting the money out of the politics. As long as the people who are making the laws about getting money out of politics are the people who are getting the money from being in politics. And then there are those reasonable, moderate souls who would say, but Bob, and I'm setting up a straw man here and I am going to kick the snot out of him. But Bob, these advertisements are the price we pay for free speech in America. Which to me sounds a hell of a lot like 20 dead school children chopped into chutney by a semi-automatic rifle wielding the homicidal maniac is the price we pay for being able to protect our freedom with our guns. They are both bullshit arguments. It is perfectly constitutionally acceptable to have reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on speech. That principle is older than dirt. Can't yell fire in a crowded theater, or a movie in a crowded firehouse, for that matter. But this isn't a freedom issue. This isn't a liberty issue. Do you have enough money? Let's say you want to say, oh, I don't know, let's have some election campaign finance reform. Do you have enough money to send out flyers to everybody in your county? No, you don't. But the Koch brothers do, by God. And so do the people who are financing the Democratic campaigns. I want to be absolutely rock-solid certain that nobody mistakes that I'm giving a pass to anybody on this. These are not liberty or freedom issues. These are economic issues. These are capitalism issues. Because if we followed the economic chain that runs from the big billionaire political donors, and shit rolls downhill, and it rolls all the way downhill to some little print shop, or it rolls downhill to WPIS-TV running ads, or, you know, the busted knuckle Daily Volcano and Moral Guardian of Freedom, or whatever the paper is. It's about the money. It is not a damn dime's worth about the freedom. Okay, here's an interesting observation from Carol. According to federal law, Title 18 U.S. Code Section 1705 makes it a federal crime to vandalize mailboxes. That puts your mailbox under federal jurisdiction. Once you install your mailbox, you effectively lease it to the feds for the service of mail delivery. Mm-hmm. And she notes, those people producing the flyers pay the post office handsomely for those permits. There. Yes, it is economic in nature. And to the extent that it is economic, I have an absolute right not to participate. But I don't want to just sit here and bitch about something without proposing a solution. I wish our little family commune congregation was a little bigger than it was. I honestly do. Because I'd like to start a movement out of this. Everybody collect your political flyers. And you remember the scene in Miracle on 36th, the Christmas thing with little Natalie Woods? 34th Street? I don't know. You remember the scene where they're challenging the reality of Santa Claus? And it's in the courtroom, and the door bursts open, and bag after bag after bag after bag after bag of children's mail addressed to Santa Claus is put before the bench. I'd love to see something like that happen. I'd like to see a movement where we take all this political filth and have bags upon bags upon bags upon bags, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of these bags, and deliver them to, say, Rents Priebus's yard. Or decentralize a little bit and deliver a bunch of them to, the local Republican committee's yard or the Democratic committee's yard. Or start a movement and make a plain statement. And you know what? People could say, hey, you know, Bob, that's a hell of a way to make an electoral decision. But what if it's especially applicable to me because, you know, the issues that matter to me in West Virginia are not being addressed by any of the candidates running for office from a so-called mainstream political party. The only person that I have any interest in voting for in this election, I can't because he's not in my district, Ed Rabel. But what if we said to them, hey, if you run or anyone runs on your behalf, one single, filthy, sleazy, dirty, nasty, divisive attack campaign ad, I ain't voting for you. Not even one. Because, see, what I said earlier about why it's so hard to get campaign finance reform, because the people who would have to pass the campaign finance reform are busy getting the money from the lack of campaign finance reform, is a reality. But, hey, what about the unseen hand of the goddamn market that Adam Smith invented? What about political pressure expressed and implied as a function of economics. What about a boycott where you get enough Americans together to say to a broadcaster, for instance, "Dear WPIS, you accepted and ran, and I understand that you claim that that federal law forces you to, but you were paid handsomely for it. You accepted and ran political advertisements in this last election cycle. As a consequence, I am contacting every one of your other advertisers and telling them I will not do business with them because of that. That I will punish your other customers because of your goddamn sleazy conduct. Now, you say you're federally mandated, then you've got the microphone, you operate on the public airwaves, get on your goddamned horse and tell Congress to change this." I'm pissed off. Yeah, I do know that, Irish Dave. Irish Dave pointing out, you know that first-class postage rates subsidize the delivery of that bulk mail crap, special fourth class, if memory serves. So when we put a first-class stamp on a letter, we are part of that whole deal. And I love the Postal Service. God, I love the Postal Service. But it has been co-opted into a wholly corrupt, utterly bereft system. There, if we can't do it legislatively, there has got to be a way to change this filthy system. I mean, I've seen some real stupidity in the last few years. Remember, I live in the state where Joe Manchin assassinated a piece of paper pinned to a tree. There's a hero for you. I took dead aim. There has got to be a way to teach these fuckers that we mean business. And I'm not talking about violence. I'm talking about the exercise of some sort of choice, of some sort of personal reality, of some sort of agency. I mean, I began to wonder what if and again multi-partisan, okay? What if there is one candidate who comes along and says, "I will tell you plainly what my positions are. I will own them. I won't run from them. I'm not going to run from my life. I'm not going to run from my mistakes or my successes. I'm going to tell you what I want to do if you give me the job that I'm asking you to do. I will not pollute your mailbox with one single goddamn scrap of this garbage. I will not run a single fucking ad on a TV station and ruin your enjoyment of a football game or a ballet or dancing with the stars. I'm not going to run a radio ad. I'll knock on doors. I'll make public appearances wherever people will listen to me. I'll have serious conversations, but I will not." That candidate wouldn't have a goddamn chance, would she? Probably not. But there has got to be some way of registering a protest against this filth. And I despise it. But I also acknowledge that what they're pushing me toward is simply not voting. And I recall the words of, I believe it was Emma Goldman, "If voting worked, it would be illegal." And I acknowledge that Republicans need for people not to vote. Republicans never win high turnout races. especially where the people turning out are the people that Republicans hate to have vote. You know, I find it hilarious. Nick Joe Rahal and Natalie Tennant desperately need my vote and the votes of others of similar mindedness to me. Because they're being opposed by some real Lulus. I mean, the dangerous Koch brothers, Republican types, whether it be Shelley Moore Capito, or Evan Jenkins, or that Mooney fellow, whose name I can never remember other than Mooney, from Maryland, who's carpet-bagged his way into the Republican nomination for the 2nd District, or Nick Casey. Now, let me explain. Every one of those candidates that I just named, every one of those candidates has not and will not acknowledge the brand-new study that has come out that talks about the fact that mountaintop removal blasting dust creates precancerous changes in human cells. They won't deny it. They'd have to acknowledge it existed to deny it. So not one of these people who wants to run to allegedly represent the people of West Virginia actually will acknowledge something that is desperately dangerous to a hell of a lot of the people of West Virginia. So what do I owe them? My vote? At that point in time, am I not an enabler? God, I started us off with a little bit of funny and then just threw that right in the trash, didn't I? Irish State pointing out, but Bob, the USPS is the U.S. Postal Service is the classic example of private-public partnership. Put that in your zone improvement program. Zip. Yeah, I liked it better when it was just a government program. Yeah, there's a ton of news out there today. Ebola czars. But I freely admit that this program serves as therapy for me sometimes. And I guess this is one of those times. Oh, by the way, the National Review. Remember them? That they were the gang that said America was not ready for those people to enter polite society. Yeah. They have put Lena Dunham on the cover of their magazine and absolutely excoriated her for having the nerve to write in her autobiography about the fact that she was raped in college. Really? It's disgusting. I mean, they got right down into some name calling. They put a fake tattoo on her arm on the cover. In which the tattoo reads, Lena Dunham, sadness, irony, therapy, cowardice, Oberlin, Brooklyn, feminism, narcissism, sex. Written by Kevin D. Williamson. Didn't we bring him up last night? Kevin D. Williamson on the pathetic privilege of Lena Dunham. over at the Washington Post, Tim Herrera, in a blog post, did a little ciphering in Gazetas himself, and he said 18 total number of paragraphs in the story. National Review likes very, very long paragraphs. 2 paragraphs about Dunham's body. 5 locations referenced when debating whether Dunham is fat. 1 photos of Dunham eating cake accompanying the article. 7 number of paragraphs Williamson used to describe Dunham's sex and dating life. 10 explicit references to Dunham, Dunham's infant sisters, or Dunham's mother's genitals as part of a 3-paragraph section about Dunham's sexual abuse of her sister as supposedly written in her book, Not That Kind of Girl. 5 paragraphs Williamson uses to say that Dunham is a false rape accuser. 1 bizarrely out-of-place references to the surprising number of anecdotes from Palestinian fundraisers in Dunham's book. 6 appearances of the phrase voice of a generation or variations of it, is she or isn't she? 1 paragraph about Dunham's shopping habits. It would appear that the right wing have still not learned anything from the 2012 election and the likes of Todd Akin and legitimate rape and shut that thing down and, oh, God. Now, I mean, to be fair, I don't much... I've seen clips of her TV program. It doesn't speak to me, but it does speak to a lot of people, so that's cool. But I don't care if she's if she operates a cement mixer, makes TV shows, cooks at a grill station in a diner, is a lawyer, a doctor, a merchant. It doesn't matter to me. They have put her on the cover of this magazine to shame her for stating publicly that she was raped. And there is next to nothing you can do, on the other hand, to shame the National Review. So, there we are. It's about 14 minutes past the hour. Hopefully we're all fired up and ready for Friday on the Front Porch. I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, we've got a great crowd in the chat room. You're welcome to jump in. Welcome to the room, Lance Rocks. Thank you. I don't feel so alone now, Jan. Jan just said in the chat room, Bob, I can tell you Jerry gets just as ticked as you do about the crap that we receive in the mail or on our fence. And again, I'm not blaming the post office in this. I want the people who produce this pornography, this obscenity. Because that's what it is. It's political obscenity. There's not a word of truth in any of it. There's no proper civic purpose to any of it. There is no redeeming social value to any of it. Yeah, but what about the guy at the print shop that has a job? If that's what it takes to run our economy is way past dead. But think about the billions that are going into, and I said this 2 years ago and I said it 2 years before, maybe someday somebody besides us will think about this. Think about the billions that go into this process and what those billions could do. Hey, Koch brothers, you fucks. Why don't you take those billions and go cure cancer or Ebola? Democratic donors who are given for all of this sleaze, why don't you take that money and feed the poor? The hungry. You know, it occurs to me with the E-Gads E-Bowler freakout we're in right now, it brought into kind of stark relief for me that admonition from Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, about the importance of visiting the sick. How do you live up to that command? Because remember, if you've not done it unto the least of one of these, my brothers, you've not done it unto me.
And if you have, you have. I got this sleazy thing in my email box the other day from some right-wing piece of shit. Talking about how, no, really, if Thomas Eric Duncan had lived, he should have been prosecuted and imprisoned. Really? We're saying that after the guy's dead? Didn't he suffer enough? No, not for some goddamn Republican he didn't. Gotta suffer some more. By God, you know what? I think these sons of bitches, if they could, they would, honest to God, they would bring back crucifixion. Well, see, Kelly in the chat room's got an idea that actually I was toying with. Kelly says, next time, I think we should mail all the shit back to him. I thought about going and getting myself a return to sender, mail refused stamp, and just stamping them all and putting them back in the mailbox. But then the post office would probably just throw it in the trash anyway. I want to make sure that these sorry bastards get the message. And man, I tell you what, there are some people out there I despise. But these political consultants who craft this garbage, please tell me that there is like a 9.5 circle of hell that they're in, that's somewhere down there under Judas Iscariot. Now, see, I that's why I wanted to get the stamp that says return to sender. I don't want to waste any more time. It would take me longer to write return to sender than it would to just ka-chunk. But this isn't just me carping. This is part of one of the seminal issues that speaks to whether or not we actually live up to the promise of our higher philosophical ambitions in this country. Right now, we are not. We haven't for a very long time. They say the Lincoln-Douglas debate took 6 hours or something. The guy who spoke before Lincoln at the dedication of the cemetery at Gettysburg spoke for a couple of hours. Poor old Abraham Lincoln, who was about to be coming down with, I think, smallpox or something, stood up, spoke for 5 minutes, and sat the hell down and turned out one of the most brilliant pieces of oratory this country's ever known. We've got to be able to, because see, let's understand something. These politicians are not particularly sharp. It does not take great intellect to run for office. There are some great intellects in office. Bless his heart, Rush Holt in New Jersey is stepping down, and that guy is a nuclear physicist. There are some good intellects in the Congress. But it is not a requirement for success. If great intellect was a requirement for political success, Louis Gohmert would never have gotten out of his front door, and neither would Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin or Steve King or Steve Stockman or Paul Eyes from the Pits of Hell Brown. Or this Tom Tillis character running for Senate in North Carolina stand. The only thing required for political for admission to political office is a vast is access to vast amounts of money, and even more vast reserve of monstrous ambition. And, you know, I don't think that there's ever a problem that does not have a solution. And there has got to be a solution to this. Because if there isn't, we're screwed. And maybe that's it. Maybe we're just screwed. But I hope not. I want to extend thanks, very kind thanks, to Gary Laborman. Gary just met and exceeded Tom's challenge. So let's see if we can get out front a little bit this evening. Sure would be nice. Anybody who, if we've got 15 folks with 10 bucks or 10 folks with 15 bucks or something like that, we'll take care of Tuesday too. And won't that be nice? Thank you, Asa, for joining in the fundraising this evening. It is all ever so critical to keep this little effort going. And I might remind us all, we are precisely 7 days away from the 9th birthday of this radio network as a standalone internet-only operation. Now I remember when Ed Schultz described efforts to by listeners to keep progressive radio alive as bake sale radio, and he said it wasn't real radio unless you had real advertisers. You tell me which is more real, this or something far more commercial. I'll leave it up to you. Thank you, everyone, for keeping all of this going. Because you are what keeps this going. So let's take a little break, and that'll give us time to fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's Friday on the Front Porch. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, all you have to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and he'll approve you, and you'll be part of the ongoing conversation. We also have the new Gizmo line, which is 304-663-HORN, 663-4676. I suspect that that's our buddy Bill, who's on it right now already because, well, he hasn't been able to participate in Friday on the Front Porch in quite a while, and it's you guys who made that possible by providing the funds with which we bought the Gizmo line Gizmo. Let's see, a couple of quick emails. Bill, out in Montana, subject line, election junk mail. I wonder where these political parties get their mailing lists. Are the addresses of registered voters a matter of public record? If so, then the responsibility lies with the county election officials. Just one possibility. What would it take to have those records made unavailable to political campaigns? Just wondering. One wonders if that would even be deemed constitutional, because we will protect the economic sleaze of electioneering above almost all other things. Yeah, I imagine those probably are from voter rolls, and they charge you, you know, it's like a penny a name or something. Thank you, Jan and Jerry, for kicking in. We are now a third of the way toward meeting Gary Laborman's answer to Tom's challenge, which gets us up into Tuesday's funding, which is wonderful. Dan with an email. My solution, we need to be telling our Repiglican contacts that the Dark One in their White House has spread Ebola virus on all the voting machines to take over the country and give them the power to set up those FEMA re-education camps. Ooh, that's devious, Dan. You're wicked. I kind of like it. I like it a lot. So, okay. We'll take a break and get the Friday on the Front Porch group all fired up, because I know you're already all fired up. Conversation Radio is what this is. Bob Kincaid is who I is. This is The Horn.
Yeah, okay, it works. The police. Message in a bottle. Upbeat. Peppy. Yeah. About 27 minutes before the hour, let us stop the shilly-shallying and take ourselves straight away to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
And good evening, Carol.
Hey, Bob.
Good evening, good evening, Sergi. And good evening, Waggy.
Hello, hello.
Howdy, howdy. Wait, because we can do this. Hey, Bill, you there?
Yep.
And can you hear the Skype bunch?
Hi, Bill.
Yeah, sure can. Good to hear him.
Hot damn.
Hot diggity.
The gizmo works.
All praise the gizmo. No, all praise the Horn Family Commune Congregation for making the gizmo possible. So,
still don't know how the damn thing works, Bob. I still have too much electronics in my background. You always want to know how stuff works, you know?
It's a box.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's a box that I don't understand, but you put one cord in the back and it goes to the mixer, and then you take the auxiliary send out of the back, out of one of the auxiliary sends out of the back of the mixer, and put it into the box, and you create a mix minus, and you hook it up via Bluetooth to a cell phone, and there we are.
Well, I never got a Bluetooth. I only got as far as yellow ones, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But praise be, it works, Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting on a goddamn tube tester that I have, mutual conductions tube tester, Sparky. I paid like $400 and something for the last time I saw them. They were running for $800. But they don't go anymore anywhere, you know.
See, I haven't seen a tube tester since the 70s or so.
Yeah, that's when I bought
used to have them in the grocery stores, right as you come in the automatic doors. Right by the steam cleaners.
Well, the mutual conductors checker was a hot action. I had one. My uncle gave me one that was made by Hickok, and he used all punched cards to set up the circuit for the tube. And he got it out of World War II. It was a government-issued job. Leave it to the government to always find some way to make something that they figure anybody could operate, you know? Yeah, right.
I've just been going through stuff in the man cave lately to see what I got. Two of everything, practically, see what I can get rid of.
Yeah.
I have
an abundance. How good is the VLM? How good is the VLM anymore? Digital style, you know, modern style.
You want to know what I use? You can look. It's a Fluke T1000 volt amp.
Oh, yeah, a Fluke, yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Well, we had to build our own stuff when I started in school. We were building the, who was the company that was giving all that build-it-yourself crap?
Heath Kit.
Yeah, Heath, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did one of those in high school.
Yeah, that was a good... Because your background with the planes was more electronic than it was jet engine.
It was electrical power generation and distribution.
Yeah.
And then it's my years in the IBEW, I'm an inside wireman. I wire everything behind the meter of any building.
Oof. I had a guy come out and show me one time how to jump the meter when I was having trouble paying for the electricity. He came out and we set up a jump on it. And the meter didn't turn, but I had a lot of electricity working in the house. Hey, if the way they feel, you know.
If you get caught, you're going to jail.
Yeah. Well, I could say that. There's a lot of things I did in my life if I got caught. God almighty, smoking a joint in 1964 or something, they'd throw you in a slam, you know?
Oh, by the way, when we had our power outage that fried, and honest to God, Sparky, I don't know how it did, but it did. Because it seems terribly coincidental that the power supply in the streaming PC just decided to shuffle off this mortal coil with, you know, at the same time as a power outage. But when the power was out, I did. I walked around to the side of the house and checked our little digital meter, and it was as silent as a graven image.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that part of it works. But then again, okay, so there's a larger question. If we know, as we do, that from time to time I'm getting 30% more voltage than I'm supposed to get, then doesn't that mean that a power surge could possibly be even worse?
Yeah.
I mean, because of that?
Does that meter tell you what's coming in your house?
No, you have to pull it and put a meter on the lead.
Then it's not. You told me it was a digital meter. I thought maybe it had a readout. Like smart meters tell you what the.
No, it's just a digital readout that gives you consumption.
Because my meter reads out like 243 for incoming voltage.
No, the only way we ever found out that we're getting what we're getting too much wise was by pulling the meter out of the, you know, off its base and putting a voltage meter to the actual contacts.
You were like 257, weren't you?
Yeah, 259.
Oh.
So, who knows? But I mean, is that okay? So there's a technical question. The PC was plugged into an uninterruptible power supply that was absolutely functional. Other stuff that works was plugged into it too. But
when you shut the PC down before it had no power, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I was thinking it was still on, and then it just lost power. That could have hurt it.
But who knows? So that's I got a to-do list this weekend as long as my arm. website stuff, seeing if I can cannibalize a power supply into the streaming PC. Yeah, and that, of course, involves unplugging everything that the power supply is plugged into. God damn, you know, fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I sent you sustenance.
Yes, you did. And I admit it. I used the musical interlude to have another couple of slices of Caribbean Red Hot Monterey Jack. I did. I'm
did
guilty.
Did you open any of the jars?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And took
where
us.
You,
and
where
took,
are you getting that stuff, man?
I got it from Carol.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I tasted it, but I'm also going to try not to be a total pig about it. But, yeah, no, you were worried about the viscosity of the peach? No.
Yeah, Katie put too much pectin in the peach jam, and it doesn't, like, pour over your ice cream. But,
no, I don't need it to pour. I just need to put a dollop in there, and you know, it's like roast beef with horseradish. You get a little bit of horseradish on the end, and you get the roast beef. Same thing. Get a little bit of peach jam, a little bit of vanilla ice cream. You're golden.
See, here's the thing about the apples and the peaches and the elderberries that grow along the Missouri River Valley is that it's all the reason that it's so amazing is because all of the when it floods here. All of that rich nutrients from the river bottom feed all the land. So while it's
sort of Nile-like,
it really is. But the soil here is amazing, and there's just a big swath of land here that's just orchard after orchard after orchard, and they produce more apples and peaches here. Second only to, like, Washington State. More than Michigan.
Well, they are delicious. And I got all over the peach.
Well, wait till you try the apple butter on the biscuits. It's amazing.
Oh, I'm an old apple butter fan.
And that's from Stevenson's, which is like the oldest orchard, the oldest family orchard out here that makes all their stuff. That was a jar I had had set back for some time, as you could tell, but just as good.
More peaches in California?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I believe there are.
Well, I hear there's a peach that grows along, you can get it up in Canada, along Ontario, you can get it along Lake Erie. There's, it's a certain type of peach that seems to grow only on, in this land next to the Great Lakes. Anybody ever hear of that stuff before?
No.
No, because I knew an old guy out here in Lake County. He was about 90 years old. He was an AA member. He raised peaches. And there's a certain type that he said grows best along. Well, Lake Erie is weird. When you've got two salt mines within 20 miles of each other, 30 miles of each other, under a freshwater lake, you know? Yeah, that's what we have here in the city.
And it wasn't all that many years ago that wasn't Lake Erie on fire? I mean, because
that Cuyahoga River caught fire. Cuyahoga River, up and down that river, was more steel mills and more creek joints than you could believe. But I'll tell you what about that. That's where the money was flowing to. There was work for people. Now, we used to have three steel mills here. I had a cousin who was a worked the switch engines, pulling stuff in and out of the steel mills. Finished product coming out, raw metal going in.
By the way, you mentioned the Cuyahoga catching fire. The one downside with the Missouri, Carol?
Yeah.
I remember.
Other than the obvious.
Well, I remember a couple of hard winters back when the geniuses, at a time when the Missouri River froze solid, said, "You know what we're going to do? We're going to melt that ice. We're going to throw a whole bunch of coal ash on there, and it'll just melt that ice right up, and the barges will get right through." This they then did.
Oh God!
And of course, coal ash comes from coal-fired power plants, and coal ash is like all the poisonousness of coal that is, to use a biblical term, pressed down and shaken together. If coal smoke has X amount of, say, arsenic in it or mercury, then coal ash has 100X of arsenic and mercury because it's concentrated, because it's caught in the pollution control system. The problem is, law of unintended consequences. What do you then do with what you collect? And that's not to say they haven't tried to do some stuff. There's a lot of families in this country who have been made very, very sick because their new homes were made out, built with drywall, you know, sheetrock, that was made from coal ash.
The stuff that was turning green, they were getting from China. They were getting a lot of that plasterboard.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know if it came online or not, but at one point in time, there was this proposed sheetrock factory in northern West Virginia that was going to make sheetrock out of coal ash. Yeehaw!
Wonderful.
That would have been a fun place to work.
We all know what that happened to the Chinese sheetrock.
Well, you know why cinder blocks are called cinder
That's
blocks.
That's what I'm talking about, the Chinese stuff. Yeah, that was... What was happening to it? It was crap, I know that much.
He released a chemical inside the wall that destroyed the electrical and plumbing systems.
Oh, okay. I knew it did something. I couldn't remember what it was.
Cause him to corrode.
Well, here in Hooterville, we can't afford to pave our roads. And in the wintertime when it snows and we have our many ice storms, because we live right on the freeze line, they don't salt the roads here. They throw cinders on the road.
Yeah.
That's what they do here. Of course, we have a volcano.
They were doing that here when I was 5 or 6 years old, which would have been 47, 48, but they like the salt now.
Bless their hearts. You know what they do up in Wisconsin? They de-ice their roads with saline from the cheese-making process.
Well, that's not bad.
They spray the roads down with cheese juice.
Now that's a cheesy solution.
And all the Wisconsinians who drive around on ice-free roads say, praise Jesus. Sorry.
And I'm sure Governor Walker tells the poor people to come out, you know, if you're hungry, go lick the road.
I wonder if the deer lick the road. I mean, the deer like salt and stuff. By the way, he and Mary Burke are neck and neck, 47% and 47%, according to the latest poll.
Which is insane. That man should be losing.
That man should be indicted.
Well, so
the way clears the way?
Exactly, Maggie.
Have y'all heard about our Republican Attorney General candidate down here in Arkansas?
No.
What's the name?
Oh, she is a Marsha Blackburn / Sarah Palin / Michelle Bachmann with blonde hair.
Okay, so her baby picture looks like a box of rocks. Okay, go ahead.
She's a hot mess. And she is the latest accusation was that she was fired from the Arkansas Department of Human Services with a notation, do not rehire. This was in 2007.
Really? Do not rehire?
Do not rehire. And yet, this is what she doesn't want the file to be FOI'd, you know, because they can, and she claims an exemption, but she won't release it herself because she claims that the file has been, quote, altered.
Oh.
Jesus.
She sounds precious.
She is, Carol.
I got a fun one. And after this, yeah. I think we're going to go to your Christmas display story, Carol.
Oh, I can't wait.
I know. Dateline for this story is Randall Washington. Okay, so most of us had the high school experience of one form or another. And we remember, remember Spirit Week?
Oh, yeah.
When you had to show school spirit and team spirit. Oh,
yeah. We got spirit. Yes, we do. We got spirit. How about you?
Yeah, exactly. And all the little punk rock kids up at the top of the bleachers going, oh, fuck you.
I know. I sat with them.
Yeah, so did I. So they had Spirit Week out in Randall, Washington at White Pass Junior and Senior High School. Goddess of Irony, on duty. And Spirit Week involved coming dressed as your favorite celebrity.
Oh, God.
This according to KING TV5.
Yes.
Just the setup says this is not going to end well.
So
a couple of sophomore boys decided, one of them arrived at school that morning dressed as Nicki Minaj. Hot pink gown, hot pink hair. And another one showed up as Miss America. Well, that is when the principal stepped in, Principal Gary Stamper, and said, you boys can change clothes or go home.
Why? Aren't they celebrities?
Yeah, there wasn't anything in the rules. But see, this cannot be tolerated.
Was it just too gay for him?
No, I think it was too trans. I mean, if the two boys had come as some, oh, say, famous male gay celebrity, okay. I guess. But no, I mean, if you show up actually flaunting the notion of giving up your white male privilege, well, there's going to be trouble. But there is a happy end. There's sort of a happy ending to the story. The next day, which was not Spirit Day, come dressed as a celebrity. The next day, 10 students showed up dressed as members of the opposite gender.
I like it.
Yeah.
Were they told to change clothes or go home?
No, they were not disciplined. And the superintendent of schools got hold of the story real quick. You know, the klaxons went off and And Superintendent Chuck Wyborney has said the two boys will not be suspended for their costume choice and said he's going to investigate district policies on such matters. Again, this is Washington State. If this had happened in Georgistan, there would have been a lecture about how in Deuteronomy it says to stone such boys to death.
They'd have taken him out back and beaten the shit out of them.
Yeah. The superintendent said, if it happens again, we'll handle it differently. So that basically means he got on the phone to Principal Gary Stamper and said, what in the wide, wide world of sports do you think you're doing? meanwhile, one of the kids, by the name of Mason Mudge, said, I think it's really awesome that all the kids support me and support the decisions that I made. I walked into school this morning, and everyone was dressed in pink and all that.
Oh, Lord, you know, I just have to, you know.
Go ahead, Sergi.
I just have to be so jealous of all of y'all that live in reasonable states. You know, being stuck down here in Texas is no fun, and...
Wait, who do you think you're talking to? Where do you think I am, Sergi? Reasonable states.
Well, no, I'm not talking about you, Bob. I'm talking about the whole commune here, you know. I'm talking about people like Duncan who live in, you know, civilization.
I was going to say, Sergi, where do you think I am? I'm in Hooterville.
I mean, shoot. I mean, you know, Washington State sounds like a pretty damn good place to live. So is California, Illinois, or New York.
And it just cooled down here, Sergi, so I can go outside and do a heck of a lot more stuff now.
It cooled down to, cooled down to what?
70s.
Oh, paradise.
It was 90 here.
61 here this morning. Today was perfect. I think it got up to about 66 degrees. Tomorrow, by the way, is Bridge Day. I don't know. Check around online. You might find footage, you know, a live stream or something of fools jumping off the bridge with parachutes. I ain't never going to do it. But there will be on Bridge Day, the population of this county triples. There will be 100,000 people walking on a single arch bridge a little more than a mile long and 876 feet above the New River at the canyon floor. Even I get a little claustrophobic in a crowd like that. But it is fun. It is a great deal of fun.
Kind of the last gasp before it gets so damn cold you can't do anything.
Well, what it is it's... That Saturday, third Saturday in October, marks the last day of Gauley season, Gauley River rafting season. After that, they won't be releasing any more water from Summersville Lake to create the class Oh My God rapids on the Gauley River. And so it's sort of the season-ending party, and it'll all wind down until about March of next year, and then it'll crank back up, and then Gauley season is August and September. So all the water that gets collected over the course of the winter and the spring is then released in the late summer and fall to form these rapids.
Sounds like fun, actually.
It's the state of West Virginia's biggest one-day celebration. It goes from about 9 o'clock in the morning to about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then there's activities in Fayetteville and all the little restaurants put their best foot forward. It is. It's quite, and there's, you know, booths and vendors, and it's a lot of fun.
Because here all we get are Civil War reenactments.
We have the Orchard Festival this weekend.
Oh, fun. Is that the pistachio orchard?
No, it's just any orchard. I don't know what it's down. It's going to take place at a local elementary school down Highway 99.
And down here, the Texas Stand State Fair is just wrapping up this week. Well, next week.
The State Fair in Arkansas is wrapping up this weekend also, and also this is the first weekend that the Razorbacks make one of their two quote-unquote home games in Little Rock. They're playing the Georgia Bulldogs.
Oh, they're playing the Dogs?
Yeah, the Dogs.
Okay, let's test my memory. The Little Rock, that's War Memorial Stadium?
Yes.
Which war?
I think it was World War I. It wasn't, you know, Civil War or War Between the States Stadium.
It wasn't the War of Northern Aggression Stadium.
Well, I tell you what, that was a whale of a game last Saturday, Haley.
Yeah, and I didn't get to see it. I listened to it on the radio. Well, cord cutter and, you know, no, I won't go into that.
I understand. I understand.
Hell has frozen over in Kansas City. The Royals are going to the World Series.
And I'm about to thoroughly piss off Marty and all the Giants fans, but how do you not root for the Royals?
Because I live in California.
Yeah, and see, you and Marty are the only ones in California.
And I've been a Giants fan since the 1950s when Willie Mays, when they moved here.
I'm the girl who walks around Kansas City with a shirt that says, "Go Chiefs!" And in real small letters underneath it says, "And take the Royals with you."
I've sat in that stadium. I've watched baseball. I saw the Yankees play in that stadium.
At the K?
Yep. Many, many years ago.
But the way the Giants ended the game last night was really exciting. The walk-off home run.
Right. No, I think either the miracle will stand or who's the favorite? Have anybody seen any odds?
I haven't.
But
they have died. You know, Kansas City is the city of fountains. And they have dyed all the fountains in Kansas City blue. And they look like freaking giant Slurpee machines. Yesterday, I'm sitting at the intersection of Broadway and Southwest Boulevard trying to come back to Hooterville. And I'm looking at this fountain going, what in the holy hell is that?
Where does it start, Kansas City or San Francisco?
It starts in Kansas City.
Yeah.
But remarkably, this is the second time that two wild card teams
are in the
World Series.
I thought it was the first time.
No, it's the second time.
I'm not.
And we're the wild cards.
I looked it up the other day on whether or not how many times two wild card teams made it, blah, blah, blah. But this is the second time that the two wild card teams are playing in the World Series.
And I did check, and it is official. The Cubs are mathematically eliminated from next year's playoffs already.
Hey, I'm sorry. I love the Cubs. I can't help it.
Who doesn't?
I have too many great memories of Wrigley Field. That is the most awesome, awesome field in all of Major League Baseball. Or it was until they screwed it up with putting lights up, but that was after I left.
I noticed there's been a little bit more day baseball in the playoffs, and I thought that was nice. Because in my younger days, I remember day baseball. I remember the Reds and the Orioles playing day World Series baseball and running home from school to see it.
Yeah, that was quite common in the old days, yeah. Yeah, I remember when Don Larson pitched a perfect game. Jesus. And the guy, he ended the game with the guy who had played for the Indians, the guy named Dale Mitchell, struck out. And that was the end of that. Because that was something you thought you'd never see, you know? But there was only, in those days, there was, you know, just two teams, and that was it, you know. There was one playoff game I remember in 48. I was a little kid, of course, but the Indians in Boston tied in a dead heat for the Red Sox. They had to have a playoff game to see who went to the series. They've turned it into another money machine now. The more games you play, the more money you make, you know. That's the theory.
Oh, I remember when Marge shot. I remember when Marge shot threw a fit when the Reds took. Who did they take in the World Series in four?
They were a strong team in those days.
I mean, this isn't big Red Machine era, but I think it was their last World Series win. They did it in four, and Marge Schott had a fit because she wasn't going to make enough money because. They, at least back then, I don't know, maybe it's changed since then, the pay structure for the teams was different.
Well, somebody could check on something. After the 1919 series, they changed the way these guys got paid. That was the Black Sox scandal of 1919 when that, you know, was it Nine Men Out? Is that the name of the movie they made about the bribe situation?
Yeah, that was, and in fact, that's John Sayles.
But the pay structure didn't really change until free agency came about when Catfish Hunter.
No, Curt Flood.
That's right. It was Curt Flood.
But no, there was a modification of it. Well, and within, because if it only goes four, the owners don't make money.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the way it was. And Marge Schott was furious. And I forget who it was that told the story of the really shitty, cheesy dime store ring that she provided for them winning the World Series. I always got the idea that the beautiful but cruel owner of the Indians in Major Leagues was probably modeled on a not hideous looking version of Marge Schott.
If Marge Schott had treated her players as well as she treated her St. Bernard.
Well, yeah. And then there's that whole, you know, she will forever be remembered for, that Hitler guy had some good ideas.
And her racist rants. She was awful.
Yeah.
And she was awful.
Okay. But, we can't wait any longer.
Yes.
You know, I noticed a couple of weeks ago that there's already Christmas crap for sale over at Kroger's.
Oh, and there's Christmas crap over in sale in various stores here in Podunk.
And the city workers are putting the Christmas lights up on the Riverwalk today.
Boys, Paris has you all beat.
Yes.
Paris has you all beat. Parisians are feeling more than a little uncomfortable about this recently erected Christmas tree, given that it looks like a giant inflatable sex toy. The installation called Tree by American artist Paul McCarthy stands at a whopping 80 feet tall, and it looks like a big green butt plug.
Oh, my. It does.
Are they feeling a little inadequate over there?
Well, the sculpture is accompanied by a gallery where the visitor is welcomed by a forest of similarly suspiciously shaped Christmas trees, culminating in a room full of chocolate figurines, including some of Santa holding these little chocolate butt plugs.
Oh, I see. Yeah, and there's a giant Santa holding out a, yeah.
A bit like triple dong. Yeah.
Triple ripple or something.
Yeah, this butt plug esque monolith has totally freaked out the far right anti gray group, Printemps Français, who complained on Twitter that the Place Vendôme had been disfigured and Paris humiliated. Taxpayers, this is where your money goes, they ranted. And apparently it's not the first time this particular artist has raised eyebrows and the ire of conservatives with his artwork. Last year, he created a giant inflatable turd in Hong Kong. And in 2011, he installed a pair of animatronic George W. Bush sculptures having sex with pigs in a London exhibit. Oh. And it looks like it's all carved out of chocolate.
Please.
Paris, isn't this the place that's known for its giant steel erection?
Yes, we're not talking about Paris, Texas.
But if you check out this thing online, it's wild looking.
It's big, it's green, and you know what? I'm not a praying guy, but I just said a little prayer to the goddess of irony. Dear goddess of irony, mm-hmm. please make sure Bill O'Reilly sees this. please, baby Jesus, make sure that Bill O'Reilly sees this.
Knowing that tension, that homoerotic tension between Bill O'Reilly and Geraldo Rivera, they might get still deep.
You know, the only thing that would have made it more perfect from the Bill O'Reilly standpoint, Carol,
what?
Is if the star would have been made out of a giant falafel.
If the star's a little droopy, it would be rather vulgar.
I was hoping Paris wouldn't want it because I want to put it on the lawn in front of the Hooterville City Hall.
And of course, it's the right wingers who are. I can only imagine the outrage of a French right winger. It's got to just be vile. But no, please put it up. Yeah, I'd like to see it on the Alabama State House grounds or there in Little Rock, Haley, or oh my, well, you know, Austin's probably too liberal to really have a big hissy about it, but maybe Jackson, Mississippi.
Jackson, Mississippi, or on the Grove during the next ball game
I was going to say Baton Rouge, but they just hang beads on it.
I don't know. I would love to hear Mike Huckabee in Arkansas go ape shit over this.
He's actually living in Florida now. Thank God.
Hide your kitties. Hide your dogs.
They're just a joy to have him around.
Oh God! I saw that story and just couldn't get
over in California.
Oh, where else would it be?
What was that, Sergey?
I was saying I'm sure the Floridians are just overjoyed to have him there, just like y'all in California may end up being stuck with Rick Perry.
Why is Rick
Perry moving to California?
Perry is moving to California.
He wants to get in on that Californicating?
Which, by the way, got me irony with how much the Republicans here in Texas like the Republicans here in Texas like to say, oh, look at California, but look at Texas. California is their biggest target. And so
Yeah, Mr. Perry made it his mission to get as many companies out of California and into Texas as possible.
Wonder how that's all working out now with EGADS Ebola.
Oh, jeez. It's gotten terrible here. Arkansas has now become a Ebola crazy now. It's just become the hysteria is just outrageous. Already two hospitals had, incidents reported to the local media, and they've made stories about it.
Incidents? Up on
yes, and there was some scares, and of course, both incidents turned out to be, it wasn't Ebola, but the freak out is on here in the natural state.
I want to know who Ebola's press agent is, because I want to hire them.
Well, let me guess. If your skin tone is, any kind of shade darker than snow, and you go to an emergency room, expect to be treated even more like shit? If you got a fever, they're
still down here. I'm right. Oh, sorry.
No, please go.
It's like, how do you think I feel down here, dude? I mean, with the, I mean, I'm right here in, you know, the Ebola zone here in theory, it's Etzistan here. I mean, you know, I can't even watch the, you know, because I mean, I do, like, I do have a TV with rabbit ears on it, and I like to watch the local news, okay? Just, you know, because we do have a couple of stations completely to the right. But even all the stations, though, every one of them can't even turn on the radio either, okay? Because it's simply the format. The basics have gone Ebola, 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 weather, sports, Ebola. Every newscast for the last couple of weeks.
A noun, a verb, and Ebola?
Basically, yeah. I mean, literally, Channel 8.
I saw something on Facebook.
Everything was about Ebola.
I saw something on Facebook last night where some person in Mississippi, because there was a reference to Tupelo, said, I've researched this a lot, and you can get it from sweat.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I quit working
on
it, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, so are we just so dim that we don't, I mean, because you can get it from sweat if sweat touches some mucous membrane of yours, or you've got an open cut.
Yeah, if you're licking a sweaty person.
Yeah, or, you know,
Those are usually the people I say, well, don't kiss any sweaty Liberians on your plane trip back from West Africa, and you should be okay.
Oh, that takes all the fun out of the intercontinental flight.
Mile High Club and everything.
I'm just waiting for this guy that's on the cruise ship off of Bermuda or something like that, theoretically should not have any problem because he was at the very end of the quarantine period, blah, 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 and he's on the ship. Now, let's assume he gets a big fever, and he's pooped in the toilet on the ship. Now, when that ship comes into port, because ships can't dump the sewage at sea anymore, that ship has to come into port. The potential is that all the fecal matter in their holding tanks is now contaminated. So now we have to have hazardous waste folks in incredible suits to ship it off to the local sewage treatment plant. And everybody in the local sewage treatment plant now has to be in suits to deal with all the stuff. To me, it's just amazing how this whole number is going to come down because the Republicans put through the sequester and Texistan had their, you know, no regulation, blah, blah, blah bullshit in their hospital.
The hospitals in Texas have been screwed for many years.
Well, I'm not saying it's been this year.
It does not surprise me at all that this is where it happens.
But free market economy, no government regulation, political viewpoint, cut budgets, sequestration. Goddamn CDC is not going to tell me what to do in my hospital because I want to make a profit, get rid of the regulations.
Right, I mean, let's say.
Damn.
Yeah, you've got, okay, you know, in case of an infectious disease outbreak, you've got to have all this isolation gear on hand. Well, I mean, you're not using it. So, you know, the accounting department has already told us that cost us a lot of money and it's sitting there not being used. So why should we have it in the first place? Because it's cutting into my goddamn Christmas bonus.
Worse than that, you can't just have the equipment. Folks have to be trained in it, which means refreshers at least once a year. That's an ongoing cost in the account.
Oh, yeah, we got to have a nurse that spends 40 hours in a training program, and she's not taking care of the patients in the hospital.
And, well, and you know what? Anyway, our shareholders, right, our shareholders are going to have a fit because they've got to have a quarterly profit every quarter.
That's what it comes to. Here in Texas, even the nonprofits have to follow that model because they're, quote, competing with the for-profits.
Right. And so, you know, I mean, there's a perfect storm here, but it's not a perfect storm that was brought on by Obama. And there's not a vast government conspiracy to cover up the fact that you can get it from toilet seats and sneezing.
Oh boy.
But you talk to right wing nut jobs, and they think it's all Obama's fault.
Well, right,
it's the hell out of me.
Roger. I mean, I know you're there in Humboldt and everything. I don't know how many right wingers you have to deal with on a daily basis, but I'm getting right pissed off over here. They have gotten on my last goddamn nerve because I'm tired of this privilege that they feel to just spout the stupid everywhere and expect nobody to push them back.
Virtually everybody I meet up with at my two local watering holes are white right-wing nut jobs. Blows me away. Anti-union right-wing nut jobs in Humboldt County.
Eesh. And yeah, I wish instead of saying what I'd said this morning, I would have just looked at him and said, you know, when the guy said, "Wonder why that, look at that Obama. Why would you appoint a lawyer to be your Ebola czar?" And instead of explaining to him that, you know, that you do that because there are a lot of legal rights involved in this that transcend medical protocols, and doctors aren't very good lawyers, you know, I went the intellectual route. It's stupid me. I should have looked at him and said, "Well, if the dumbass Republicans in the Senate hadn't kept the Surgeon General from being confirmed, we'd have one in office, and you wouldn't need an Ebola czar."
Well, and the NRA is the one that blocked the Surgeon General.
Goddamn right,
because he wanted to talk about deaths as being a public health hazard.
And never mind the fact that there are on I think any given day in the United States of America, 88 times more firearms fatalities than there have been Ebola fatalities.
Or for an even more apt analogy, how about how many people are going to die from flu this year?
22,000.
Thank you.
I looked up West Nile, and 49 people so far this year have died from West Nile. There have been 1,444 cases reported.
And what about this enterovirus that's running around the country and hitting kids?
Mm-hmm. It's big here.
Where's our entero czar? Or, by the way, why is that thing running around?
Yeah, that one sucks, too.
I'm going to be a grandpa in January.
Aww.
And about 4 years ago when my niece had one, and she told me, "You cannot come to visit unless you get a whooping cough vaccine." This one, you have to have flu and whooping cough before I can go up in January to Eugene, Oregon, to be around the baby. But whooping cough, flu, that and this other virus in 68, whatever it is much more deadly. And, you know, I'm not going to be cleaning up somebody's crap or their vomit. There's no chance of me at all getting Ebola.
Right. So let's just engage in a little critical analysis here. What is the difference between Ebola and flu or this respiratory virus or West Nile? What's the difference? What's the one thing that makes Ebola different?
Where it comes from.
It's
B-L-A-C-K.
Bingo, you get the toaster, Roger.
Thank you. I need a new one.
I got a whole closet full, honey. I'll get you one.
Not serious.
I went through this thing. Go, Bill. 1950, the Hong Kong flu, the Asian flu. I was a young kid, and I was 16 maybe. I went through that, and it was all the same crap that's going around now was going around about that stuff. The news media cannot stuff enough misery down people's throats and call it information.
No.
Fear sells.
Yeah, if it bleeds, it leads. I mean, Where was it? The story last night. The guy was gambling.
Yeah.
In the
casino and.
Cleveland. Yeah.
Said.
Yeah, it was in Cleveland. That's right, Bill. And they have charged him with a felony for saying, well, I've got Ebola.
I don't want to go home because my wife might have Ebola.
Yeah, that's what he said.
He got arrested for inciting hysteria. Well, why hasn't Rush Limbaugh been charged and Glenn Beck and the rest of those AHs?
No shit. Yeah, Hannity, a lot of them. You'll love this. I've got speaking of the Beckerhead, I got a beauty right here. I mean, this is wow. It'll only take me a minute. He's right here.
Break out the duct tape and tennis ball.
We might need some hockey pucks.
Yeah, here it is. Here it is. And this is real. I mean, these people have real audiences, and I can tell from like what I hear the right wing nitwit say while he's trotting along on the treadmill that's where he's getting it from. Let me just roll this clip real quick. It's not that long. Stand by.
Listen to me carefully, America. Listen to me. This may actually save your life someday. I want you to remember this. Whatever the government says to do, don't. If they say gather someplace because it's all going to be good, we have all this medical aid and everything's going to be just come over here and gather, don't do it.
We have a really beautiful place for you guys right behind this barbed wire right here.
Really, just don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. I mean, just remember what they did with Katrina. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a far bigger disaster coming if these predictions by experts are true. Remember, I was the guy a year before Katrina, and I said the most dangerous city in America. You remember this? Remember how much trouble we got in or how much heat we got, how much they mocked me? Literally a year, almost to the day, I said New Orleans is the most dangerous city in America. Forget about terror. I want you to think about a hurricane. If a hurricane hits New Orleans, here's what's going to happen. A year later, almost to the day Katrina hit, we weren't surprised, but they were. We weren't surprised at all. When it started to hit, when it looked like it was going that way, we dug up that old show, and I said, here's what I said a year ago. I'm telling you, get out of New Orleans. Get out of New Orleans. They didn't. The government, the local and state government, decided, it's not a problem. This happens all the time. No, don't take a chance.
It's not exactly how it happened.
Out of New Orleans. Because if it happens, you're in real trouble. So what did the government do? The government said, after it was all too late, come to the Superdome, because we got everything under control there. Did they?
This I do better
could
voices.
Save your life. Whatever the government says, hey, you guys, everybody come on over here. Don't go there.
Duct tape? Hockey puck? Anybody?
You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie.
Okay.
So if the government says
start,
don't lick sweaty Liberians, Glenn Beck's going to go lick sweaty Liberians. Please, government, say don't lick sweaty Liberians. Please.
I don't even want to think about that thought in my head.
Yeah, if I may, I'd like to pick apart a little logical fallacy as part.
Yeah, go right ahead, Sergeant.
Basically,
No, go, Sergeant.
Okay, I don't know. I keep hearing somebody really low. But anyway, he made a prediction, okay, about a hurricane hitting New Orleans. Well, every freaking location on Earth has its potential locally apocalyptic disaster. I mean, he could have said the same thing about an earthquake hitting somewhere in California, or a tornado hitting somewhere in Kansas, or, you know, this massive blizzard hitting somewhere in Minnesota or Wisconsin. You know, he's like, oh, I'm this big visionary because it's so dangerous because a hurricane might hit. It's like big whoop. I mean, it's like me saying tomorrow somewhere it's going to rain.
Right, exactly.
And it's not like a hurricane never hit New Orleans before.
Yeah, but this particular hurricane was a record breaker.
I get that.
Which by definition is, you know, just something rather unusual.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, a lot of the horror that came out of Katrina was not the storm. But Glenn Beck seems to have forgotten that. It was the failure of the levees. Which the Army Corps of Engineers had been warned time and time and time again were not up to a Category 4 hurricane, let alone a Cat 5.
Right, in which the Army Corps of Engineers had said, well, we can't fix it because President Bush's budget won't allow us to do it. And I when I read that in these reports, because I went and dug through them at the time, I was astounded that it wasn't the president, it was actually named president.
Yeah.
So whoever was writing it, you know, had a little bit of beef with that budget being cut.
So you're saying Obama did it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, just checking.
Yeah, right. Through his Kenyan Muslim time travel magic.
Well, he killed Kennedy, damn it.
Kidnapped the Lindbergh baby, too.
I will never forget. There was a short period of time after the hurricane went through that area, and before the levees broke, and there was there was a news report on NBC News. I watched that evening, and it was the reporting that was everything. They had dodged a bullet and all of that. And looking it back and remembering that, it just seems so surreal that the worst nightmare of that situation had yet to occur. And then the next morning, the levees, you know, it was reported that the levees broke and then no hell broke loose.
And remember, I remember in the aftermath, Flush Flimbaugh and all the other right-wing types saying, those ignorant black people just wouldn't leave New Orleans.
Yeah, because when, of course, they all have SUVs they flew in.
Right, yeah, we're gonna get in the Gulfstream 5 and, you know, jet on out, Rush, just like you. But I really am. I'm hoping the government issues a public statement saying, don't wallow in Ebola vomit. Because then, according to what he just said, Glenn Beck has to go and wallow in Ebola vomit.
Oh, reverse psychology.
Well, no, I mean, he just said whatever the government tells you to do, don't do it.
And, of course, Glenn always has to do the FEMA re-education camp scare. You know, here, stand behind, we'll take care of it.
Yeah, and I've long said that I'll be over there under the South Guard Tower selling black market cigarettes.
That's right.
And, of course, Glenn Beck is going to volunteer at a local crisis center to take care of Ebola victims.
Yeah, when pigs take wing.
Well, if you guys get a chance, go over to Facebook, and there's a page there called Your FEMA Reeducation Camp that was put up by a comedian friend of mine from Boston. And you would be shocked at the number of people who believe that it's real and post all this shit on there. But he just keeps it going. His latest thing is he put up a picture of a stand-up comedian, and it says, this is the only joke that will be told at the FEMA camp. Please laugh accordingly. And it's a comedian going, and I said, Ebola, I just met her.
Jesus.
And he puts stuff like that up all the time. And it just sparks outrage from the right. And we have had so much fun. I've been an admin on that page for a long time, and it is just so much fun. So if you get a chance, like the page, join it. You will remain entertained forever and ever.
You remember how much flooding there was in the, I think it was mid-depression years. There was Cincinnati was underwater. There's a famous picture of two Cincinnati Reds rolling around the bases. And the bankers went down to Cajun land, you know, below New Orleans, and wanted them to open the levees so that New Orleans wouldn't flood. And the people refused to take the bankers' alleged money, but the bankers sent a bunch of thugs down there, and they opened the dam. They broke the damn levees below New Orleans. And the guy that wrote Short People, he wrote a song about that. That was
Randy Newman?
No, this was a long one. Well, yeah, yeah. Well, and then of course there was Herbert Hoover's response to. I'm echoing. Mute, Larry.
Oh, sorry.
There was Herbert Hoover's response in which black people were chained to each other, filling sandbags along the Mississippi River during that great flood.
People see, they never talk. When they do a weather report, they don't ever go back and say, well, this is the worst time since something else. And I'll tell you, New Orleans was built where it probably shouldn't have been built. I've seen movie clips or TV clips of people sitting in a restaurant right near the river, and there's a ship going past. And that ship looks like it's, you can reach out and touch it. And it towers over the restaurant. Because the whole trouble, that ninth ward in New Orleans was famous for being a problem area to build in.
But see, the thing is, there's an entire country in Europe that fits that description, you know, but they figured out how to keep it going.
Yeah, the Netherlands with the polder system.
There we go.
Yep.
And it's everybody is a link in the chain. Everybody is a part of the process. Everybody has an equal stake. And it's worked for rather a long while, hasn't it, Waggy?
Indeed.
And just in case you thought that was the only flip out that the Becker had on hand, it's actually getting worse. Somebody, Carol, do you still have the Thorazine dart loaded up?
Oh hell yeah!
We might want to get one up to Glenn, because I think the congenital mental illness that runs in his family is catching up with him. Check this out.
This is what will be said a year from now. If this gets out of control, how can there possibly be a God when he allows this to happen? He didn't. We did. By not standing up and saying, demanding, by not calling our congressmen, our senators, by not going to Washington, by not standing in front of the Capitol, by not standing in the hallways and demanding. Are you out of your minds? Are you all out of your minds? This is not about a loss of rights. This is not about my taxes. This is not about you even spying on me. This is about you being so unbelievably incompetent, you are putting the lives of millions of people at stake. We are no longer talking about anything but lives. And these lives are not Republican lives, not Democrat lives, not old people, young people, all people. These are the lives of all people. E pluribus unum, we are about to become one again. Through our ramifications, he will humble us. And these people in Washington are so arrogant. I haven't seen any humility. I haven't seen anyone in Washington say, hey, you know what? I was wrong about ISIS. You know what? I was wrong about Benghazi. You know what? I was wrong about the caliphate. Oh, you know what? It seems I was wrong about the economy. Oh, I was wrong about health care. Oh, I seem to have been wrong. Maybe I will humble myself now and fall to my knees and say, Lord, everything I seem to be doing seems to be wrong. Where do you want me to go?
Seems I've been advised by my advisors, who are the best in the world, the smartest, the brightest, the best, the youngest, the strongest. It seems like I've surrounded myself with people who don't understand universal laws.
You know, universal laws like the world is less than 7,000 years old. Universal laws like people who love each other should not be able to get married if they both happen to be guys or both happen to be women. You know, universal laws.
When is he going to go back to being just another Rick Dees wannabe? He doesn't belong doing this.
No, Larry, that's not the question. With all due respect, that's not the question. The question is, when is he going to engage in the same behavior that has plagued the rest of his family?
Doesn't he have a history of being a first-class lush?
But his family has a history of self-induced mortal coil shuffling.
Oh boy! Yeah, I've seen it. My first wife had some problems with what they call bipolar nowadays. She was MD in the old days. Wonderful person, but until she got straightened out with those things, she was a couple of times tried to end it, you know. Of course, maybe she got a good look at her husband. I don't know. That might have done it, but who knows. She's a wonderful girl, but it was a tough thing for her to live with, and she finally got around it. You know, they gave her a certain type of medication that put an end to that. But it was, you talk about an up-and-down world, buddy. That's what it was. That's what it was. And I added my downs to the ups, that's for sure. My behavior wasn't the greatest in the world either. I'll be the first one to admit it. But I had a hard time telling a 22-year-old college girl, no, I can't go to the motel with you. And that was my problem. If I had a problem, that's what it was.
We just got a note in from our dear friend Jude, who said, as Glenn speaks somewhere, Bob, there is a psychiatric facility preparing a bed for him, and they are ready and able for the task ahead.
Well, they've destroyed this system in Ohio. They destroyed the mental health hospital system here. And it was a good Republican-Democrat thing. The Democrats said these people have been in the hospital for too long. Okay, they're probably right. And the other people said, yeah, let them out, and we'll just give them a Social Security check. And a lot of these guys ended up living in the University Circle when I was living and playing there. And I saw plenty of this stuff. And because they didn't follow it up with the kind of daycare centers and treatment facilities that they shouldn't. They did a half-assed job, which is typical of politicians. If the Republicans wanted to save all that money from the state hospital systems, and the folks on the other side were trying to be fair with people. When you put the two together, you got a problem. Because it's still a problem here.
Yep. It happens here in my state, too. In my city.
Oh, and then there's this, and I want to differentiate this, so Glenn Beck is out there trying to terrify his audience because I guess there's good money in it, and Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is trying to terrorize Emery and Eileen and Clyde and Marvelline and Arlie and Dreama and, you know, all those folks because there's good money in it. And you know, Texas is ground zero for this because, like we discussed, you know, because Texas. Academia should be different. Can we agree on that?
Yep.
Okay, so the Syracuse Post Standard has the story today. It's from yesterday, actually. A 3-time Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist said he's disappointed at being uninvited to a Syracuse University journalism conference because of Ebola fears. Michel Ducille of the Washington Post was disinvited from the event because school administrators fear he could transmit Ebola to people after covering the crisis in Liberia. He has been back in the United States for 21 days and is symptom-free, according to New Photographer magazine.
Little reality check. You were asking about, you know, should ask academia be free of this? And, you know, we all kind of tentatively agreed yes. But then you say university administrators. That's not
academia. They're not academia. They're what
they're
were
founders.
They're politicians.
No, they're bureaucrats. Yeah,
thank you.
Let's see. He says, I just got off the phone with the dean, and I'm pissed off. I'm disappointed in the level of journalism at Syracuse because, you know, they got this bit. I mean, they're really highfalutin about their journalism school, Syracuse is. And I'm angry that they missed a great teaching opportunity. Instead, they've decided to jump in with the mass hysteria. He had spoken to Dr. John Brooks at the Centers for Disease Control, who told him that the possibility of spreading the disease after a 21-day incubation period is very unlikely. He said, I certainly understand Eric Spina, Syracuse University Vice Chancellor and Provost, said, I certainly understand his frustration. So, you know, goddamn, here we go. All the jokes that we made, and I know Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, and Ferg, you know, we have sat around here on our computers getting shed of a lot of stress and angst and stuff, playing Left for Dead. I know. As a progressive and a liberal, I'm not supposed to like first-person shooter games, but goddamn, it's zombies, and it's fun. I mean, when you can whack a zombie with a frying pan or just knock the bejesus out of it with a Stratocaster, and it's possible in Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2, you know, it's not to be missed.
The clang when you do so is priceless.
The clang is beautiful, Sergi.
Oh, I love Left 4 Dead 2 so much.
Blank.
Fantasy, reality, different things.
Right, you know, because and see this some of this stuff is so broadly cultural. You know, I've mentioned in the past, whenever we're talking about the Reverend Donald Wildman of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, he got his start objecting to Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh, good.
You know, had it not been for the Reverend the sort of philosophical space would never have been created for James Dobson to have a fit about SpongeBob SquarePants and Patrick, you know, Patrick's pink and everything, or for Jerry Falwell to complain about Tinky Winky because Tinky Winky's purple and his symbol is a triangle and that's the gay symbol and he's purple and that's every gay person's favorite color and Tinky Winky carries a purse. Well, it all started with Reverend Wildman having a hissy about, you know, Wile E. Coyote being shoved off cliffs. But I grew up on this stuff, and there's brilliant comedy in it, and I have never once felt the urge to shove anybody off a cliff, although occasionally when it felt like shit was really hitting the fan, I have been known to utter those last famous words of Daffy Duck, to wit, mother. But that's about as far as it goes. Yeah, or you know, occasionally quote Bugs or, you know, hey, look, I'm dancing. I shall hate myself, cometh the dawn. But the thing is here, there's this broad cultural sweep of, and I think this country, there's something inside this country that I can't quite identify that makes us particular, and I don't think it's human. I think it's an American thing, or maybe it's a white thing, that makes us particularly susceptible to this stuff. And so consequently, we want to believe that there is a coming zombie apocalypse. And I think there's a whole segment of this population of our country who are thinking that maybe Ebola is the zombie apocalypse. But the problem is, when you are actively infected with Ebola, you're not going to go anywhere. You're going to lay there and shit and piss and puke and sweat and bleed yourself to death.
Now, there are zombies from, you know, dark traditions, but that's an entirely different and
right. This is not that
disturbing story. But, no.
Enough about Kansas.
Yeah. Nice one.
Bob, you and I live in a land that is based on reality. And the one thing that you value and that I value and Sergi values and Sparky values and everyone in the Horn family values is the truth. And not the hysteria and not the lies, but we will sit down and take a subject and boil it down to the common denominators. We will look at Ebola. We will look at the pathology of Ebola, the origins of Ebola, the vectors of Ebola. And we have this clear understanding that you are in no danger and I am in no danger. And the vast majority of the millions and millions of Americans are absolutely in no danger of this. But when we have an outlet like Fox News that is free on all cable channels, that is a megaphone of fear for the right wing for political and financial gain, that's when we just go apeshit. Because we value the truth, we worship the truth above everything else, and we will find it on our own.
Yeah, but let's expand just a little bit, please, Carol, because there's part of the reason. For a long time, I have referred to this country's punishment fetish. You know, we have capital punishment in this country because we like to kill people. When we kill people, we say, "See, that person was bad. That proves I'm good."
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's tried to execute me yet, or I'm not in jail. It's a Calvinist streak.
We have always been a country who needed someone to hate. We have always needed an enemy.
We have to hold a mirror up to ourselves, but the other person in the mirror has to be an other. The other person in the mirror has to be someone who is deserving of having something awful happen to him. You know,
that's not American. That's pretty universal.
It certainly does fit in with Calvinism, Waggy.
Yeah, but we also need to step back that the unregulated, free market, libertarian hospital in Texas is the vector for Ebola in the United States.
Bingo.
Yes.
And yet, Roger, what's the name of the hospital?
Presbyterian... Something.
Dallas
I
Presbyterian or whatever. But of course, Presbyterian is in there, and yet it's run by a for-profit hospital system.
It's run by the super for-profit venture capitalist suckers who are proclaiming that, we did better this year than we did last year, because last year we only got 7% on our $3.5 billion of billing and our $380 million, and we had 7% last year. We got 12% profit this year, and fantastic for our shareholders.
Yeah. You want a brief history on how that happened?
Well, it goes back to Reagan.
It's a pretty common model that and the other used to be actually run by their various churches. You'll find, Presbyterian Hospital, Methodist Hospital is really big in Texas.
And Catholic hospitals.
Methodist is partnered with HCA, and you know who HCA is. But another model is to actually sell to the for-profit. But when they sell to it, they the for-profit keeps the name, so it's got this veneer of being, actually
right.
For people.
And what's the name of the church
gets a slice of those profits.
Yeah, but what's the name of the congressman who?
No, that was
millions.
Well, that was the former Senate Majority Leader from Tennessee, Bill the Cat Killer Frist.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Millions.
Continues. These are ongoing agreements.
And just by way of a giggle,
the church gets donations. Quote, they get return on, they get money for selling their name, for prostituting the name of their good church to these for-profit healthcare people who make money off of people's misery, death and dying.
and by virtue of it being funny, it makes it all the more effective. Here is a perfect explanation of what we're talking about.
Yes, more apparatus, please, nurse. The EEG, the BP monitor, and the AVV.
Yes, certainly, doctor.
And get the machine that goes bing, and get the most expensive machines in case the administrator comes.
We'll soon have you cured.
Leave it all to us. You'll never know what hit you. Goodbye. Drips up. Injections.
Can I put the tube in the baby's head?
Only if I can do the episiotomy.
Okay.
There you go. Legs up. Tucker, come in. Come on, little girl. That's it. Jolly good. Come on. Spread around there. Who are you?
I'm the husband.
I'm sorry. Only people involved are allowed in here. Right.
What do I do?
Yes?
What do I do?
Nothing, dear. You're not qualified. Leave it to us.
What's that for?
That's the machine that goes bing. You see, that means your baby is still alive. And that's the most expensive machine in the whole hospital. Yes, it cost over £750,000. Aren't you lucky?
The administrator is here, doctor.
Switch everything on. Morning, gentlemen.
Very impressive, very impressive. And what are you doing this morning?
It's a birth. Ah, what sort of thing is that? Well, that's when we take a new baby out of a lady's tummy. Wonderful thing you can do nowadays. Ah, I see you have the machine that goes bing. This is my favorite. You see, we lease this back from the company we sold it to, and that way it comes onto the monthly current budget and not the capital account. Thank you. We try to do our best. Well, do carry on.
Oh, the bulb is dilating, Doctor.
Oh, yes, there's the head. Yes, 4 centimeters, 5, 6 centimeters. Lights! Amplify the ping machine. Masks up. Suction. Eyes down for a full house. Here it comes. And frighten it. Yeah. And the rough toes. Show it to the mother. That's enough. Right, sedate her. Number the child. Measure it, blood type it, and isolate it.
Okay, show that up. A boy or a girl?
Now, I think it's a little early to start imposing roles on it, don't you? Now, a word of advice. You may find that you suffer for some time a totally irrational feeling of depression. PMD, as we doctors call it. So, it's lots of happy pills for you, and you can find out all about the birth when you get home. It's available on Betamax, VHS, and Super 8.
And there we have it.
Yay, yeah, Super 8.
Yeah.
Bing.
We leased it back to the company we bought it from so that it comes out of the monthly expenditures and not the capital accounts. That's the part that gets me.
Ping.
I have a Super 8 projector if anybody wants one.
See, I got a whole bunch of regular 8 film. My dad would never spring for Super 8. And I don't, for all I know, it's ruined, but oh, golly.
This projector will play it, too.
Ooh. It'll play regular 8?
Yep.
Wow.
Digitize that stuff.
Yeah, I know. I got to find somebody cloud. Who can. And then
get in the cloud so the NSA backs it up.
Yeah, why pay money when the NSA can back it up for you? Hey, guys, it's been a wonderful, wonderful Friday on the Front Porch. Thank you so much. Thank you, Sparky, as ever. Thank you, Sergi. Thank you, Carol Baker. Thank you, Haley. Thank you, Jeremy, Larry, Roger, Waggy. Sorry we didn't hear from you, Todd or Jeremy, and not much from Larry either, but that time will come. And for anybody interested, remember, the Horn Molloy Skype chat group does continue after Molloy at about 12:05 a.m. Eastern Time, 9:05 Pacific.
jump right in. The conversation is fine. Thanks to everybody who helped us keep up with and get ahead on fundraising. And thank you, Bill. Glad you could be here on the Gizmo Line.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with this bunch because this is a – believe me, you ought to hear some of the local talk shows, Bob. You'd, you know, talk about me screaming in the night. It's a good thing I can't get through the window, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, that's – as far as listening to local radio is concerned, let's don't and say we didn't, you know. Have a good night, Bill, and a good weekend.
You too.
Thank you very much, one and all, for keeping us ahead of fundraising. Like I said, thank you to Asa, and thank you to Sal, and thank you to Carol, and thank you to Jan and Jerry, and thank you very kindly to Gary Laborman, and thank you very kindly for providing the challenge to Tom out in the Bay Area. It is much appreciated. Thank you to all of you who listen, participate, however it is you do. The fact that you share your finite time on this little planet to build and sustain this little community is, well, it never ceases to amaze and inspire. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol. Thank you very kindly to John Fox for all of his technical assistance. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACAC, A-C-H-E.A-C-T. No, A-C-H-E-A-C-T.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.